Blog Talk Radio.
Tired of you. Tired of you chased by the police and arrested. Need a spot where we can kick it. Spot where we belong. That's just for us. Ain't gotta get all dressed up and be Hollywood. You know what I mean? Where the f*** go when we die? Ain't no heaven for a thug. That's why we go to Thug Mansion. That's the only place where thugs getting free, and you gotta be a G. At Thug Mansion. A place to spend my quiet night. Time to unwind, so much pressure in this life of mine. I cried times I once contemplated and would've tried, but when I held that, all I could see was my mama's eyes. No one knows my struggle, they only see the trouble. Not knowing it's hard to carry on when no one loves you. Picture me inside the misery of poverty. No man alive has ever witnessed struggles I survived. Praying hard for better days, promise to hold on. Me and my dogs ain't have a choice but to roll on. We found a finally spot to kick it, where we could drink liquor and know a bicker's over the trick. A spot where we can peace. And even though we G's, we still visualize places that we can roll a piece. And in my mind's eye, I see this place, the players going fast. I got a spot for us all, so we can ball at Thug Mansion.
Every corner, every city, there's a place where life's a little easy. Little hands laid back and cool. Every hour, cause it's longer. Leave all the stress from the world outside.
Go.
Nothing but peace.
I wanna go.
Street passion.
A place where death doesn't reside. Just thugs who collide, not the start beefers. No cops rolling by, no policemen. No homicide, no chalk in the streets. No reason for nobody's mama to cry. See, I'm a good guy, I'm trying to stick around for my daughter. But if I should die, I know all of my albums support her. This whole year's been crazy, ask the Holy Spirit to save me. Only difference from me and Ozzy Davis, gray hair maybe. Cause I feel like my eyes saw too much suffering. I'm just 20 some odd years, I done lost my mother. And I cry tears of joy, I know she smiles on a boy. I dream of you more, my love goes to Afeni Shakur. Cause like Ann Jones, she raised a ghetto king in a war, and just for that alone she shouldn't feel no pain no more. Cause one day we'll all be together sipping heavenly champagne where angels soar with golden wings and Thug Mansion.
Every corner, every city, there's a place where life's a little easy. Little Tennessee, we're back and cool. Every hour, cause it's all good. We're all the world outside.
Mama don't cry, your baby boy's doing good. Tell the homies I'm in heaven and they ain't got hood. Seen a show with Marvin Gaye last night. It had me shook, drippin' peppermint snot with Jackie Wilson and Sam Cooke. Then some lady named Billie Holiday sang, sitting there kicking it with Malcolm till the day came. Little Tasha show grown, tell a lady in the liquor store that she's forgiven. So come home, maybe in time you understand. Only God can save us when Miles Davis cutting loose with the band. To think all the people that you knew in the past that passed on, they in heaven found peace at last. Picture a place that they exist together. There has to be a place better than this in heaven. So right before I sleep, dear God, wear a mask and remember this face. Save me a place in Thug Mansion. Remember this face. Save me a place in Thug Mansion. Up in Thug Mansion.
RBG's. Know what I mean? It's war. Know what I mean? Yo, Stick. I mean, you should be real on
war.
The block. Pigs be out there, occupied army. RBG's, it's a takeover, not a makeover. Yeah. The cops stop you just because you black, that's war. Run you through the system for your prince, that's war. When they call my hood a drug zone, that's war. Slumlord charging you for rent, that's war. Why they so rich and we poor, that's war. If you young and black, you sell crack, that's war. The White House is the Rock House, that's war. George Bush coming out his mouth, that's war. Chilling on the corner with your gang, that's war. Popo do the same damn thing, that's war. When they murdered I'ma do the yellow, that's war. Marching in the streets is a strategy of war. Knowing self-defense is a strategy of war. Soldiers try to link with other soldiers in the war. Revolutionaries got to know the art of war. War, what about hip-hop? Use that. Matter of fact, fuck a rap battle. What about a gap battle? Let's take it to the beast and see which cat tattle. Is it kids versus beans or B versus Ho? What about y'all real niggas against the 5-0? This is M1, DP, don't you forget. Cause you can talk, 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 but that don't mean shit. I ain't gotta pop the top to see where your brains went. This rap shit is way bigger than entertainment. It's the people versus the pigs when it all go down. It's not pop versus big, it's who's getting the power. And power ain't money, dog, it's self-determination. Like taking hot and making it the real people station, that's war. Know what I mean? Yeah. Rap war, whatever war. You live a fast life, more or less, more so, it's still war. Dead Prez, the People Radio. Yeah. Sit down, get down, get down. RBDZ, biatch.
You are now listening.
Before you gone, 'cause the day that you gone, greedy don't last too long. The
secret is to win, jump out the game and have money for life. Not to stick around till you lose all your shit to the vice.
You've got to be who you are, and all the stuff is in. You'll find peace in the end.
Thank you. I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Cocaine quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain.
Hit me!
There's not a minute to spare.
Don't worry.
There's not a minute to spare.
Don't worry.
Going, gone. Now I dialed 911 a long time ago. But don't you see how late they're reacting? They only come and they come when they wanna. They'll get some more truck and then bomb the corner. They don't care cause they stay paid anyway. They treat you like an ace that can't be betrayed. I know you stumble with no use people. If your life is on the line, then you're dead today. Late comers with the late comers, judging that's a body bag in disguise, y'all, I'll bet ya. I call them body snatchers cause they come to fetch you with an autopsy ambulance that says I text ya. They are the kings cause they swing amputations. Lose your arms, your legs, and them a compilation. I can prove it to you, watch the rotation. It all adds up to a f***ing situation. So get up and get down. 911 is joking, your town. Get up and get down. Late 911, where's the late crown? Get up and get down. 911 is joking, your town. Get up and get down. Late 911, where's the late crown? Correct. You can ask my man right here with the broken neck. He's a winner to the job never being done. He would have been a full effect. The late 911 was a joke, cause the owl is joking. A day to talk until your life when it's broken. They need to be in a pawn shop on them. 911 is a joke, we don't want them. I call a cab cause the cow will come quicker. The doctors huddle up and call a flea flicker. Reason why I say that cause they flick you off like fleas. They be less nasty while you're calling on your name. Or to the stream, to go to limb. You are first when you really are dim. You better wake up and smell a real flavor. Cause 911 is a fake lifesaver. So get up and get down. 911 is joking your town. Get up and get down. Late 911, where's the late crown? Get up and get down. 911 is joking your town. Get up and get down. Late 911, where's the late crown?
George Jackson, age 29, California Adult Authority inmate A63837. Imprisoned January 12, 1960. Offense, second-degree robbery.
Convicted of stealing $72 from a petrol station, Jackson had a juvenile record. He was advised to plead guilty to get a lighter sentence.
Sentence, 1 year to life. Term served, 11 years, 7 months, 7 years in solitary confinement.
One to life means the convict is eligible for parole each year, subject to the judgment of a parole board. Jackson was refused parole 8 times.
January 1970, charged with the murder of a prison guard. Future, if convicted, death row.
With 2 fellow prisoners, Jackson allegedly killed a prison guard in reprisal for the shooting of other convicts. The 3, George Jackson, Fleeta Drumgo, and John Cliché, became known as the Soledad Brothers.
August 21, 1971, San Quentin. 3 guards and 2 prisoners killed in an alleged escape attempt. George Jackson shot dead.
Time seems to be passing much faster these last few months. Wonder where it's running to. What's building? Well, I'm positively displeased and I'm positively destined to remain so. Someone may have to get hurt, but power to the people. George. Fear, the emotion that stiffens and inhibits the mind of most men, causing them to be incapable of acting in their defense at the moment of trial, is totally lacking in me. I could look upon my total ruin with as detached and unconcerned as I look upon theirs. The payment for life is death.
All right, there we go. We live. Black power, black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned in to In Defense of the People, weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central Standard, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party, National Chairman, Brother Nat Turner, your co-host, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, and myself, your engineer on the ones and twos, Sister Amina, National Minister of Communications. Call in every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time, 845-277-9266. Again, that's 845-277-9266. To save the people's radio, press the number one to participate. Tonight's topic, as we said, the pigs are an arm of the state, the execution of Jaheim McMillan. We also have a special guest tonight, my brother and comrade, in struggle, Brother Laramie, also known as Big Knowledge. He's a member of Decarcerate Louisiana and the founder of Evolve, Victory Over Louisiana Violence. My brother, call it my brother, is doing an amazing job in the trenches for the fight for our people, not only just in Baton Rouge, but for the slave state of Louisiana. We're going to go ahead and open the line for Brother Knowledge so he can let us know what's going on. Black power, can you hear me, comrade?
Black power, all black, everything. Thank you for inviting me to the People's Radio Station tonight. And thank you all for being comrades from the beginning, I'm just going to get right into it. Right now, we're in a state of emergency for our people, for our ancestors, for the future of our children. Right now, we have an anti-slavery bill on the ballot for the people to vote on, Amendment Number 7. Let's just get right into that. So when you look at the Louisiana Constitution, Article 1, Section 3, it's titled The Right to Individual Dignity. But when you go ahead and read it, it says, it's a phrase, it says a sentence, it says slavery and involuntary servitude are prohibited except in the latter as punishment for crime. Now, this piece of legislation, this phrase was ratified in 1865, 10th Amendment, which we all know what that is. That further enslaved our people. That's where Jim Crow started, the vagrancy laws, to further imprison our people. So the white picket fences turned into chain link fences for our people. And for the first time in history, in Louisiana's history, we'll be able to make a decision to decide if slavery needs to be a part of our future, because we know who it affected. It affected the black people of this state and also other states, the rest of the states around this country. All right. So not only does Louisiana have it on the ballot as anti-slavery bills, it's four other states, Alabama, Vermont, Tennessee, and Oregon. And also we have the federal amendment to get rid of the 13th Amendment and to enact the 28th Amendment, which will make slavery prohibited also, slavery and involuntary servitude being prohibited. But we have to have 3/4 of the states through legislation that pass as far as a vote in order to enact that 28th Amendment, which will make slavery and involuntary servitude prohibited forever and for good. And as we all know, this country, America, KKKA, is the only country that has slavery in this form, in the form of so-called prisons. these camps where they warehouse bodies for profit. And so right now in downtown New Orleans at the Zony Mash Gym Theater, the first and last black-owned movie theater in the country, is actually a historic landmark. We are showing the Slave State documentary. The Slave State documentary is a film produced by Policy Films, but it was created from a book written by Curtis Ray Davis II. He was incarcerated in Angola as a slave for 25 years, 9 months, and 11 days. But he was released. He exonerated himself because he was the result of the 10-2 non-unanimous jury verdict, which means he had 10 people say he was guilty. He had 2 say he was non-guilty. But in Louisiana, that was just fine, which was unconstitutional. He filed an appeal. They found it unconstitutional, and he was released in 2016. And since then, he's been working very, very hard to free our people every way he can. And through his book, it's the knowledge. Through this movie, it's through viewing. But through legislation, it's actually on paper. Right now, you can go and vote yes on Amendment 7. We want you to support Amendment 7. Vote yes on this amendment to end constitutional slavery in Louisiana. People, this is the first time ever we've ever been able to make a choice like this for our people, because it was made outside of us after the 13th Amendment in 1865. But right now, what you're hearing on the news, you're hearing a lot of misinformation, a lot of false white supremacy propaganda. People have been, even the bill writer, Edmund Jordan, has been manipulated by the oppressors, by the Republicans that first voted the bill out of committee because they said it was too dangerous of a bill. They were afraid of the legislation that will come through of the fight that say, oh, this is going to open up a can of worms and people were able to fight for the constitutional right. Yes, this is to give people their constitutional rights back. This is to give people their personhood, their citizenship, so they can be called a person and not a slave of the state. Okay? We are not slaves of the state. We are the people of this land. So what I want you to do, if you can vote or if you already voted, get someone else to vote. Find 5 people. Text them. Tell them to vote yes on 7. The question does not look like it's in the bill. Okay? It says involuntary servitude. But if you look up the word involuntary servitude, it says see slavery in any dictionary that you can find. Encyclopedia, Google, whatever. You see involuntary servitude, they're talking about slavery. That's exactly what it is. Do not let anyone deter your mind, because Edmund Jordan has crawfished on this bill. He has made himself look like someone who doesn't go by his words, and he is not. He backdoored us, the organization that fought for 2 years to get this in, and so now he's going to be considered untrustworthy. Dishonest. He is being dishonest about what this bill is going to do. He is spreading dishonest information. Yes, and he is also standing behind these words because they have duplicated what he said in multiple articles throughout the past few weeks, and especially today. But guess what? We're going to fight. We are not letting down whatsoever. Everything that comes out, we're going to rebuttal. This is for the people 100%. This is for our ancestors who didn't know about the 13th Amendment, who didn't know about the Constitution, who couldn't fight back. If you can do anything right now, this is more important than anything you could ever vote for in the state of Louisiana and for your people and for your children. We want you to vote yes on 7. And we want you to go find the real information from Decarcerate Louisiana on Facebook and Decarcerate Slave State on Instagram. We want you to find it, because social media is so important. That's how we get information out to our people. Please, please, this is for the future. This is for our ancestors who have been hung, bled, and died. All you have to do is press a button. You don't have to swing a stick. You don't have to shoot a gun. You don't have to go to anybody else's house or do anything else. All you have to do is vote yes on 7. To end constitutional slavery. And if you know someone in Louisiana, tell them to vote yes on 7. If you know someone in these other states, you tell them to vote in support to end constitutional slavery, because they are allowed to. It is legalized today. It is legal today to treat someone as a slave. And you know where these things come from. How do you get someone inside of a prison and treat them like a slave? First, you have to marginalize them. Then you have to create food deserts in the neighborhood. Then you have to take away their economic gain. And then you have to over-police them. Then you have to give them to court and send them to high bonds and high fines so they can't get released, so they can't be treated like a slave even though they haven't been convicted of a crime. And then you have to get them to the Department of Corrections so they can go and pick cotton and pick okra and not have proper medical care and sleep on floors and cots. This is going to end constitutional slavery. The bill will say slavery and involuntary servitude are prohibited. And there's a subparagraph which made the legislators feel better because they're so afraid of this bill, which they stated last year and also this year. But because we were so resilient and we had divine intervention, we got them to push it all the way through. The subparagraph says, does not apply to the otherwise lawful administration of criminal justice. That means that everything has to be lawful from now on. That means they have to still abide by the citizenship of people. Now they have to abide by the citizenship of people because of this. It's been done in Utah, Colorado, and Nebraska already. It's already been done in three other states. This is one of the first states that can get it through legislation, through votes, and we got it through legislation unanimously with no opposition. But now the legislator, who is black, is now crawfishing, and he is backdooring the people, and we're not going for that. We are going for the vote of the people. Take your grandmother, your friends. Hey, look, let's go down here and vote this thing up out of here so we can get back to a place that we already in, but they can't treat our people like slaves when they're in these these enslavement camps, right? So let's do this together. I want to thank y'all for inviting me out. We are premiering the movie as we speak, and I just want to thank you guys. We're going to show another one in New Orleans hopefully next week so you guys can also get there. We're going to make sure that we keep this going even after November 8th. We're going to keep this going to teach people what is going on and how they can fight. But right now, that fight is that vote. All right, thank you. Black Power.
Right on, brother. Yeah, man, that's the name of the game. And it's politics as usual. You know, we see it, our relationship with the state is political, with this government. And these things have been transpiring for 5 centuries, you know, this establishment of an American corporation as a legal entity out from underneath British rule and their audacity to claim tyranny, while at the same time, you know, they own slaves, and now the descendants of the slaves are still experiencing the tyranny that those hypocrites was claiming that they were experiencing from the British Crown, the King of England. You know, this is outright tyranny. And the Constitution was written for a handful of rich white, the handful of, rich white merchants, a handful of rich white property owner, property class individuals who had constructed that Constitution for their sole purpose, while at the same time selling the rest of the population, this great document, that guaranteed the rights of all citizens and whatnot, under the watchful eye of whatever God that they claimed to have known at that time, But, it is what it is, and these types of things are unavoidable. Without talking about the capitalist system, the profit motive, the sky's the limit when it comes to that. When you look at how they were thinking, off into the future, they were they're always preparing for the future. They're always looking forward to the future. There's always developed some type of forecast whether it's going to be in the negative or it's going to be in the positive, the green and the red, you know. And if it's in the red, then they, you know, they reconstruct themselves, which is what, that's why it was called reconstruction. You know, people are under the notion that they were reconstructing the government, the system, so that, you know, black people getting part of it and, you know, their lives would change for the better. And but reconstruction was no more than just that, you know, reconstruction on the part of the white ruling class, and even the contradictions that came out of that with, you know, the John Brown raid and Bacon's Rebellion on the part of some whites who felt disenfranchised and who felt that they had been cheated or they had been double-crossed, having taken part in the so-called American Revolution. And they will promise these, you know, these incentives, just like, you know, the football players, you know, there's a, I believe it was a former coach. I'm going to coach for the Miami Dolphins last year or year before last and had gotten fired, you know, and overlooked, you know, for, you know, another job. And I guess that was, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. But anyway, you come out, and you come out on, you know, and not only him, but it's been one or two other individuals, you know, that played the game. Colin Kaepernick, you know, for one, you know, sized the game up as one big, huge plantation, and that the football players are commodities, you know, they're material assets, the accumulation of capital. And, you know, he put it in political terms, a political perspective. You know, the Black Panther Party did. You know, they placed the conditions, the relationship, the picture. So, you know, he went to making reference to draft day, you know, how that is synonymous with the investors who, when the slaves, human beings were brought the shore and they were put on display, you know, they were examined and whatnot. That was Colin Kaepernick was talking about. That's today, that's what you call the combine, you know, when the football player has to go through all these tests, you know, to display his reason why he should be in the NFL. And so he was drafted, and so this is the correlation. When the merchants were drafting, you know, the slaves for a certain amount. And so that's the, all these things are connected, they're tied in together. And so going ahead into the future, protecting their stock, their shares, you know, as shareholders, as stakeholders, they had written the Constitution, you know, for that sole purpose, contrary to these constitutional historians who would like to get us believe, you know, in that bullshit. But they had written, put these planks in place to protect themselves going into the future, because at some point, Franklin or George Washington and all the rest of, well, not the rest of it, but certain of the property class had made these statements, these comments, as though they were futuristic statements, as though they were prophetic statements. You know, George Washington, I believe, had said something about he shudders for knowing that God is just, you know. And Franklin, I believe, had made the comment about when he was asked what had transpired behind that behind that closed door meeting, where they got together and literally constructed the Constitution. And when he was asked, when they come out from closed doors or had been involved with it in some kind of way, what had come out of this so-called Constitution, conventional Congress, you know, this convened. And so he had said a republic, you know, if you can keep it. You see, and so these are prophetic states. So they were looking at this, and so they had placed these planks in place. And the chief plank, because of their mode of production, how they accumulated capital, was the slave. Was a slave, you see, whether North or South, whether North against the South. That was the chief, you know, source of labor which built this capitalist economy, you know, that we know of today, as of today. And so the 13th Amendment was put in place. It was established for that sole purpose, going into the future. And so when the slaves were so-called free, this is the birth of homelessness. This is the predicate of what you see today. And of course, yeah, somebody said, well, yeah, man, this means white homeless people. Yeah, because of the class contradictions. You see what I'm saying? But speaking specifically for my people, you know, where we've ended up at. And so these things. And so them being conscious of it, you know, so you have to really understand, man. I'm telling you, you cannot beat what you don't know. You cannot conquer what you don't understand. You can't understand some of it. You can't understand a little of it, or almost all. You have to completely understand. You have to completely understand what is really about. You know what I'm saying? In order for the people to raise the conscious level and to deal with these recurrent problems in a hot manner. You know, and so this is how the capitalists think. You know, and so if they were affected in one way, then, you know, like a chameleon. You know, chameleon stay one color for a while, as long as it's not threatened by anything. But when the threat comes, a chameleon, it takes upon a defensive posture, and it morphs itself into another color. You see, and that's what this is. And so the 13th Amendment is a product of that. And this is why, you know, it's been so historic, and some people couldn't even believe it. We are so-called, you know, 21st century, 22nd century, whatever they want to call it, and here we are today. And they're talking about, man, slavery was such a long time ago, man. I thought that shit was back. I thought that shit, you know, was done, man, you know, back, you know, when they freed us. And that's why it's so hard for some people to actually realize. I mean, what you talking about, Willis? You know, what you talking about, Willis? You know what I'm saying? What you mean is a slave thing? What you talking about, man? I'm free, man. You know, I make more money than this white boy. I'm the manager at Popeyes. I'm a manager at McDonald's, and my people under me is white. I tell them what to do. But he cannot grasp it in his mind because he doesn't fully understand. He doesn't understand, the political ramifications and the historical legacy of how the capitalists came out of owning slaves physically and no longer owning slaves physically, but owning them economically, politically, and through the prison system. You know, so therefore, that's why it was constantly in place. It's still in place. You know, so and either way we want to chop it up, whether we want to admit it or not, or whether we acknowledge it or not, it's a confrontation that's in the making. You know, and people, you don't be fooled by these token gestures. You know, these kind do-gooder gestures on the part of these white liberals. You know, like Biden and Clinton, all these people. Don't be fooled by that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know, we're in a fight for our lives. And the littlest things sometimes may make a difference. You know, yeah, like Huey and them said, you know, survival programs, pending revolution. You know, so yeah, there's class antagonism even amongst our own kind. You know, will explain. Edmund Jordan to explain his types, you know, and so we have to take him and put him in proper perspective and proper understanding. He's no more nor less than the enemy of the people. You know what I'm saying? You have to look at his portfolio. You know, this in this professional world, in this, you know, this intellectual world, politics, you know, it's a dirty game. You know, there's stakes involved. Of course, you know, there's always a ball line of money. You know, you wash my back, I wash your back. Being given a stake, a cut into the sharehold and the stocks and the prison system, private prison corporations is a business. You know, this is why, you know, there are those who see nothing wrong with the 13th Amendment. And naturally, you know, shit, a nigga did a crime, a nigga murdered somebody, what you mean? You know, you fucking right. You know what I'm saying? Put that nigga behind bars and work his ass to death. You know what I'm saying? So the corporations understand this. So the corporations, what do? The corporations, our friends in the drug business will create the conditions so we can get prisoners so they can satisfy us, and we wash their back. And we fund them. You know, so I'm the CEO of Weston House, or I'm the CEO of a McDonald's corporation. You understand what I'm saying? And I wash their back. I privately finance, you know, the new technology and weaponry that the CIA gonna need to so-called fight the war against terrorism overseas. And so it's a buddy-buddy thing. It's a win-win situation. This is what the people are not being hip to. This is what the people are not being told. This is people not being taught. You know, they're not being politicized correctly. And that's how this shit works. You see what I'm saying? So, yeah, you know, the people had to get down there and say, yeah, man, you know, we do this shit on the local level, on the state level, and the state response to the masses of the people. And you say, well, shit, you know, these individuals who profit, you know, even amongst us, you know, the entertainers, the athletes, and these people want to be superstars and big-time actors on the big screen. You know what I'm saying? You can't be quiet as a mouse. You know what I'm saying? You're quiet as no mouse. Or you very loud, you know, in your music. You very loud on the court after a slam dunk. You very loud in the commercial. You know what I'm saying? You very loud in the movie when it comes, you know, the people support. So now it's a whole thing. And we have to cut that shit out. But the Jordan is clearly enemy of the people. When the Black Panther Party recognized that certain people who didn't want to, you know, who shun these things that affected the people who was supporting them. Well, first of all, how do you get in office in the first place? How do you get the seat that he's in? Who voted for him? Who voted for him? You see what I'm saying? Who voted for him? So the people have always been the platform, the rug. You know, it's raining. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's raining real bad, and you know, you throw the towel out. You know, you done left your umbrella, so you make a dash for it to your door. You know what I'm saying? You know, you might have to run across the grass or something, some mud, some, you know, you got mud or whatever, dirt on the bottom of your shoe. You take the tile, you know, and throw the tile on the threshold on the floor and dust your, you know, wipe your feet off before you step into your house, into your living room. You know what I'm saying? You know, you got your, you know, your expensive, you know, your nice tile floor, you know, what have you, know, wooden floor, you know. That we that tile. The people is that tile. You know what I'm saying? With that, that's just to give people some understanding what this shit is about. We're dealing with a cold-hearted system. You know, and so it's profitable. There's always a way to find a legalize something, you know, to keep the profits coming in. You know what I'm saying? So it would be useless. And then, of course, you know, Louisiana is in the South. You know, Louisiana is in the South. You know, talking about the Confederacy, you know, Louisiana, you know, or Alabama, you know, Mississippi. You know, the Southern Belt, where was the hub of, most of our people at, you know, at one point in time before we expanded out into the Midwest, you know, up north, you know, west and so forth, you know, like cities like Chicago. You know what I'm saying, and was able to accumulate some type of capital, you know, make something of ourselves, you know. But I just wanted to kind of piggyback on what brother was talking about, add more context, and a real intricate picture, not just saying they and them. No, you know, how this system is, how it works. You know, what the shit is all about, the nature of it. You know, of course, you know, the warehouse, and particularly young black males between the ages of, say, like 17 and 25, because in their subconscious, it's the same thing you have in the military. It's the same thing. You know, the focus on young people, 18, you know, the 25s, you know, in the military, you take them, you take them, and you bring them somewhere, put them in a controlled environment. And train them to do what? You train them to be killers. You know, you train them to be killers. And so in their subconscious, they see this whole massive army out there. You know, an ocean of young black dudes, you know, between 17 to 25, you know, 18 to 25 years old. You know, the heart of the shit. You know, and so that's one of the main goals. You know, is to target that population and control that population. But you have to create the conditions in order for that to bear fruit. You know, and so without the 13th Amendment, you know, the corporations, you know, wouldn't be able to be as profitable. That is why they against striking it down. You know what I'm saying? And they be defeated. Even some of these white liberals, you know, who would come on board, you know, with his profit motive is their religion, and capitalism is their Bible. You know, so it's a struggle. If you want to keep struggling, you know what I'm saying, you know, we have nothing to lose but our chance. This is a protracted war, asymmetrical warfare. As I speak right now, you know, this is what they're preparing for, asymmetrical warfare, you know, a protracted war, because they have a terrible track record, you know, around the world. You know, they've gotten their ass torn off wherever they've been, you know, including having all the technology, having all the finest of weapons, you know, and whatnot, having an advantage. But it's always been the spirit of people. It's always been the spirit of the people, even when we were in Africa. You know, dealing with the imperialism of the British, the French, and the Belgians, you know, and there's always been the spirit of the people, regardless of contrary to what these Negro talking heads talking about fitting into the system and going along and you know, going along, fitting in. Oh, they need you to fit in because without you, they nobody. They can't be who they want to be outwardly, because every periodically they have to depend on the niggas, the outcasts, you know, the lumping, you know, those who out there, you know, voting age, and of course, you know, those who were slave wage labor, you know, whose wages don't cover them when it comes to living arrangements. And so the, you know, you can manipulate that, you know. So if you place your wages don't match your living arrangement, and your living arrangement must be a safe living arrangement, then it costs to have to you know, for your living arrangement to be safe. It don't cost for your living arrangement to be unsafe. And this is the origin, evolution, or the maintaining of the ghetto, the project, and so forth. And so we become a deadly mix. And this is why the 13th Amendment is so important, and why it's so vital to them, vital to their political economy, you know, to their capitalist venture. You know, but tonight, you know, the show topic, you know, jumping from that to, you know, as we said, you know, the pigs is on with the state. The terminologies are due to an irreconcilable relationship that we see through our own eyes, you know, that we're, you know, or, and, you know, once again, you want to thank the brother for coming on, and, you know, sharing, you know, his latest, skirmishes, you know, you know, with the state, you know, skirmishes lead to full blown, you know, war. You know, it's historic. You know, I wouldn't make nothing up. They know it. You know, they understand it. It is what it is. It's historical. You know, these are skirmishes. The George Floyd, referred to as the George Floyd phenomenon, the post-George Floyd era, you know, that is upon us. A lot of things are transpiring, and a lot of white people are becoming very worried. They're becoming very worried about some things that their ancestors had prophesied, you know, with George Washington prophesied, you know. So this relationship that we have, an irreconcilable one, therefore pits the streets against the police, you know. And what is the police? The police is an arm of the state. What is the state? state basically the sister of the politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police. You know, you have to cover me if I'm going to protect you in so many ways and so many words in basic plain, you know, language, you know, what the police will tell the businessman, what the police will tell the politician. You know, the judge gives the police the arena, the jurisdiction to be the judge, jury, and executioner. You know, pass legislation to place it in the hand of the pig. But those, you know, who have problems with that terminology, you know, the use of the term pig to relate to, you know, the so-called police. There's no personal trip. It's a trip in the relationship. You know, it's a trip in the relationship that transpired, that was triggered the minute that African people were kidnapped violently by force and brought and placed in the holds of ships and brought over the ocean, you know, the Atlantic voyage. You know, on the way, in that voyage, we developed some psychosis, some type of dysfunctional behaviors, some type of dysfunctionalism, which, rearranged our brainwave patterns, you know, to start thinking and reacting, responding in unusual ways, you know. So much so that, you know, a lot of us be diagnosed with a bipolar disorder, whatever you want to call it. You know, coming up, I remember Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you know what I'm saying, just changes or switches in emotional behavior, mood swings. But that is due to the clear terroristic relationship that we've had. And so from the, you know, the overseer on the horse with the shotgun, the rebellious slave, in a lot of instances that have not been popularized, that have not been popularized in movies, big screen movies, and what have you, in particularly the big screen, the Hollywood. Our story has yet to be told, fully told. It is the you know, the most tragic Holocaust, you know, in world history, in recorded history. That is not to disregard the so-called Indian. And of course, you know, that's problematic in itself, the term Indian. But, you know, just kind of a vernacular that we use, you know, the genocide that was practiced against the Native Americans, so-called Native, even that term, Native Americans. You see what I'm saying? And, of course, you know, the word Holocaust is usually applied to, when you say Holocaust, you know, in your subconscious, the first thing, because it's been beamed in your mind. You know, it's been beamed in your brain so much. You know, the first thing you think about, you know, is the white Jewish people who had been targeted by Adolf Hitler, you know, leader of the, you know, the Nazi movement, Nazi nationalist German movement that grew up, that festered in the 30s, you know, which is what led to World War II and the human rights violation that was practiced against, you know, the segment of the European, the so-called white race that, you know, embraces this thing referred to as Judaism. Okay, but it's the relationship. So our story hasn't been told, you know, because we're not the proprietors of Hollywood, you know. But this has been a story of, you know, war, war on various fronts, economically, politically, you know, socially. And when you narrow them down in societal context, what you get is a deadly mix, an irreconcilable relationship, a relationship with antagonism from day one. That, as I said, you know, from the overseer on the horse to the overseer to the officer in the so-called police cruiser, you know, with the automatic weapon, and how he trains daily and has to qualify periodically. You know, it is a requirement to qualify, you know, periodically. And as, you know, these are, you know, soft terms, neat sounding terms, but basically what the language says that, you know, every now and again I have to go and keep, you know, go and shoot and show that I'm still good, you know, hitting the target. And so when you're in the subconscious, after so many rounds of training the psychologist, you see this target. You know, and I remember he was coming up, we said, well, why isn't the target a black piece of paper and the image is white? Why they don't have that? You know, why can't the paper be, you know, with a red target? No, the paper is white with a black target, and that's in their subconscious. It's in their subconscious. So, you know, and tell me, man, you know, man, we're not playing. You know, I'm talking like going into the shit to really get you to understand. That it really get you to understand. You know, but yeah, you know, you go, shit, still, you know, show that you nice with that thing, and but at some point, so many repetitions, you develop this type of a psychosis. Where it increases, it becomes larger than life. And the only thing left now is to actually, you know, kill a real live human being, a real live human target. That's deemed as a threat. That is deemed as a threat. You see, and this is what is the predication of these police murders of unarmed young black men who are seen not as victims. They're seen as combatants. You know, they're seen as combatants, you know, enemy combatants. You know, there's another term that they use. It's another term. But anyway, and this is how they speak, you know, in these 911 calls. And they'll correct, you know, the operator if they have to. You know what I'm saying? you know, terms like assailant and what have you. You know, and this is no more, no less than war, you know, in a disguised form. And this is why the Black Panther Party was so instrumental in you know, summing things up in the proper way, in the proper manner. They didn't make the generalizations. You know, they didn't just see this thing as civil rights. Just you know, integrating and becoming part of, you know, America, you know, melting pot, you know, trying to fulfill this dream, this vision of the so-called fine folk and all that other bullshit. They place things in the proper perspective because of a relationship that people have advocated, since the descendants of the people who were violated, you know, when they were brought here by force. And so Huey was even criticized at one point or asked or confronted about the use of the term pig. It is so much over to the effect that you simply say, we ever seen a pig in a pen? You know, you see a pig in a pen, you know, have you ever seen a pig in a pen? You know, how would you describe that pig in a pen? You see him, you know, how a pig lives in a pen. Well, you know, we know terms such as filthy animal, nasty animal, you know, things of that nature, you know. In the rural areas, the pigs are actually, you know, a form of garbage disposal because a pig will eat anything. There's any sort of physical flesh or what have you. You know what I'm saying? A pig will eat anything. And so, you know, in the rural part of the so-called country, and you know, I've seen it with my own eyes. And as a little boy, you know, my grandparents, you know, had this big old huge pig, and she was getting in. You know, cook chicken. You know, you go and buy the whole chicken. You know, the whole shit. You know, and you know, you clean it, and you take the parts that you know, shit, take it in the pan, and throw it over in the pig pen. You know, and so it was the correlation between the pig and the nasty the basket of filthy sort of way that the pig had lived that was correlated to the way that the police officer treated, you know, black people in Oakland, you know, through the experience on the West Coast. You know, this is, you know, the evolution of the term pig because of the relationship. You know, black people historically have never been treated, you know, this image about treating, you know, all people's equals, the police officers serve and protect and all that kind of shit. Terms are just simply meant for a certain group of people, a certain class of people, serve and protect, to keep law and order. You know, law and order, what? Law and order is simply what it is. We don't have to wonder. We don't need Dr. Phil. You know, we don't need all these other motherfuckers who want to come in and get on scene and try to explain us what that shit is. We feel it every fucking day. You know, we see law and order for what it is, law and order. What is order? You know, you teach your children, you know, keep their room in order. You know, keep the kitchen in order. You know, keep the bathroom in order. You know, what do? You know, they keep shit clean. You know, they get up, make up their bed, you know, fold their clothes, you know, put their clothes in their drawer in order. And it's the same order of things. You know, white male rule, white male patriarchal rule. Anything that's deemed threatening, anything that's deemed oppositional or adversarial has to be put in check, has to be checked. And so the police is placed there to be the first line of defense as an occupying force. And this is what made the Black Panther Party so hated, because the Black Panther Party placed anything, proper perspective, were very clear on it. They cannot see the police in any, as anything else but an occupying force. And, you know, Huey Newton made it clear. He said, well, the police couldn't possibly be there, you know, to protect because we don't own anything. And so that's what it's about, the stakeholders, the shareholders. And so I say all that to say this here. You know, the latest example of what we talk about here is the execution of Jaheim McMillan in Gulfport, Mississippi, October 6th, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Subject of fact, you know, there's one put in some line, and there's always some call. Somebody, there's always some call. You know, somebody put in a call, some gun-toting, gun-waving. You know, somebody in possession of a gun, or as you know, some call. You know, it's a common thing. It's a common thing, and it seems to be this thing where this is applied to a specific type of profile. You know what I'm saying? So this call was supposed to be made now of some gun waving teen or teens, you know, waving guns or whatever at motorists, passersby, or what have you. You know, and so. You know, the two pigs. You know, they, you know, separate vehicles. You know, they pull up a Family Dollar parking lot. You know, the young cats pull up in the parking lot, and something about being inside the the family door. Family Dollar, but it was somewhere they pull up, and a couple of young brothers told had ran, and. You know, Jaheim was said with, you know, and you have to be careful with these reports of these stories, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, exiting or coming out of Family Dollar and somehow, some way, he was on, his body turned, you know, and his weapon. Turn toward the officer, you know, his body turned to, it's amazing how these media stories, how these carefully worded descriptions is typed up, placed in the electronic news, and you know, this gets dispatched to millions and millions of people, and we've had a similar case in the city of New Orleans, you know. About exiting, you know, a store, a business status, something like that. But, you know, and therefore the officer fired his, you know, service weapon. You know, he struck the young brother in the head. And had the nerve, to my understanding, to handcuff, you know, this little brother, 15 years old. Now, there's a witness. You know, who had said she had saw, you know, she witnessed what happened, you know, and there appeared to be a white woman, if I'm not mistaken. You know, some of these photos, these pictures, when you take them. But a woman named Deborah Stout, you know, who had, you know, happened to come into the family dining apartment. She's a Uber operator. And, you know, as people, they find spots, you know, they, you know, and they wait till they get their next whatever. And she said she had saw, you know what happened. And that this young brother had his hands up. You know, he hadn't, you know, wasn't armed or none of that. And she had said that, you know, that's when, you know, she saw, you know, the officer, you know, execute this little brother. And she said that she so affected, you know, she's traumatized, you know, suffered from depression, or, you know, sort of like PS, you know, the, this post-traumatic stress disorder that the that soldiers have, you know, the persons who have been in the military, you know, to the point so much so that, you know, she feels like she, you know, she needs, you know, some type of psychiatric treatment or whatever, you know. But this is an ongoing, constant confrontation, you know. And we understand that, we know historically that, you know, the pig is very confrontational, you know, when it comes to that. And that's what I was saying earlier, you know, it's embedded in the subconscious. It's been the subconscious. So, well, you may have, well, you know, we got black police all do the same thing. You know, so we ain't about black and white. I said, well, you know, you have to, you know, these type of roots is that only a guilty conscious, you know, would try to do it. Somebody who's always into like the logic shit, you know, this type of persuasion, you know, to try to lessen the force of what you're saying, or, you know, being very effective to be able to get people to really understand, really to get people to see, you know. But I'm also, to my understanding, you know, more than one witness. But in other words, you know, basically, you know, the accounts, you know, it end up being an as usual kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? As usual, you know, the stories conflict. You know, the police have their version. Someone's carefully selected, carefully orchestrated press conference. You know, to give this. Report, you know, this the police version, and in the subconscious, of course, you know, white America, you know, collectively, the police, you know, version is the authentic one. It's the one that is believable. You know, it's the one that has a jurisdiction. It's the one that has merit to it, because these are trained professionals. You know, this is brash. You know. You know, what they like to decorate themselves with stars and all this kind of shit, and be sergeant and captain and whatnot, whatever you want to call that shit, you know, lieutenant or whatever. You know, but it's a carefully orchestrated, rehearsed episodes, no different than the carefully orchestrated, rehearsed, you know, roles for a movie. When you've been given a script to play a pimp in the movie, or you've been given a script to play a prostitute in the movie, or you've been given a script to play a drug addict in the movie, or you've been given a script to even play a gang style, you know, villain in a movie, you know, and the good white person comes along and rescues the day, you know, or crashes everything down. You understand what I'm saying? But it's well orchestrated, you know, thing well put together. And then, you know, this body cam shit, the body camera thing, and we historically we had problems with that, and none of these coincidences. There are those of us who fully understand the whole tactic behind the body camera thing in the first place. The body camera thing is actually a strategy. It's something that Chairman Fred, leader of the Illinois Chapter Black Panther Party, and they portrayed in the Jews and the Black Messiah movie, when they, you know, they call what they named a school or whatever, you know, and these other shares so many words, we might well pack up, you know. When you're trying to say, you know, okay, don't let your emotionals don't let your emotions become so captivated that you lose or the morale to fight or you affect it by these kind gestures. Because this is a revolutionary struggle. You know, the only kind gesture, oh yeah, the actions of what could the only kind gesture that be? You know, but so, and I know there's no intention on my part to be insensitive, to those of us who lost loved ones, police murder or execution of black men by the pig. But just wanted to, you know, put something on your mind about the body camera thing, the strategic moves that the state makes, you know, to keep constantly trying to perpetuate itself as a democracy, to keep trying to reinvent the police like Dennis Rodman, you know, play basketball, you know, keep reinventing himself, some point he getting the news, shit. He had playing color, had to start coloring his hair, all these different colors, different haircuts, and, you know, just keep reinventing himself. You say something, do something, keep reinventing himself. And this is how it works. It's a strategy, you know, as a part of the police, you know, damage control. You know, every time, you need to go talking heads, get the going on by it's a new day in America, such as what they did with George Floyd, Al Sharpton and Crump, at the funeral or the press conference, whatever, it was a new day, man, that and other. He said, right, Reverend Al? He said, Reverend Al, right on. And so it's the same way every time they keep luring the people into this thing, the people get excited, the people start feeling good that finally we become part of this country. We finally count. We finally matter. Black lives finally matter after all these years, you know. And every time they do, the pig contradict them. You know, the pig, he proves them wrong. You know, he shows them that, you know, nigga, you out of your mind. You know what I'm saying? Externally, outwardly, it's the only appearance that we can give you. But even in those cases, we'll crash that shit to pieces too, because obviously it's going to be something else. It's going to be another mother whose son got murdered by the pig, got executed by the pig. You know, it's a constant. And you're the one who said, at what stage when black people get to the point where they've had, you know, we reach the brink. And people say, you advocating violence. Because, no, the pig advocate violence every time. You know, the pigs advocate violence every time. It's a potential threat of violence on the part of the pig, you know. You couldn't possibly tell me that they're trained this beautiful, benevolent way at the academy, you know, this discipline, this ethics, this morality, you know, concern, all this kind of shit, improvement on black and police relationships, all this kind of shit. And every time, the pig will contradict what's written on paper, what we're led to believe. Even like I said, with these new go talking heads, when they get in the news, when they're allowed a platform to speak, a platform to talk, you know, it has to be that way, it has to go that way. But there's something in the air where slowly but surely this shit is being put down. You know, I'm trying to think of the brother. I believe it may have been Freddie Gray, I believe it was Maryland or D.C. Well, anyway, the old man, where they talk about Good Trouble, who recently passed away, whose name escaped me right now. But even him, you know, they sent an old man, you know, as you would send an old man down there to try to, calm the people down, call for peace and, let the system, the courts, do their thing, this kind of shit there. And, they ran him out of there. You know, so, look, you go back to where you came from with this shit, we ain't having it. You know, and so it's a sentiment that's slowly but surely growing. But it's a ramped up effort, you know, those who have a vested interest that look like us, to keep pushing and pushing and pushing, you know, like Jesse Jackson come out, you know, Jesse started the shit in the 80s, you know, keep hope alive, you know, keep hope alive, up with hope, down with dope. Every time Jesse is up with hope, down with dope, you see the influx of drugs in the community. And you got Rick Ross that, you know, the real Rick Ross. But this thing is growing and growing and growing, you know. But every time they open their mouth, the pig proved them wrong, and the execution of Jaheim McMillan is the latest example. It's the latest example, you know. Now the thing with the body camera again, the strategy, the lure the people, to get the people. Fate, to try to win people's fate back into the police officer, the body camera, and the way the body camera strategically placed in a particular part or on the body, and even is been shown a lot of the times in these competitions. Sometimes these competitions end up being physical, you know, which means the pig and the the enemy combatant ends up closer sometimes, in some cases. And so the body camera can be used flexibly. You know, it can be flexible. And so in some cases, now it's very clear. And so, the family, asking, okay, well, if that would took place, even the folks who have gotten out there to protest, or the young brothers referred to as activists, and the young brother simply said, man, look, just buy the camera, and that's what he did. Then was release the body camera, release the footage. What's the problem here? Your story is what it is, carefully worded. Then what was taken all day. To release the body camera, and the young brother simply said, man, we'll go away. We'll go away, but the point out, the witness says, the young brother, she contradicted the story. You know what I'm saying? And even with the execution of Alton Sterling, in Baton Rouge, the body camera footage. Deemed to be inconclusive, and this is the objective. This is the objective goal. This is the desired effect. To be inconclusive. even with our brother Ozone Wallace, the body camera. In this instance, the footage, appeared to be in such a way. Where you had to take the pig version of the story. You know what I'm saying? But that's clear, it's a clear text. It's become very noticeable. And this is the usual thing that happens when black people become victimized a certain segment, of the so-called black race, who is seen as enemy combatants. Who was seen as the closest threat to toppling white rule, as in this fictitious country that they call South Africa. The same thing there, in Southern Africa, and the apartheid system. Apartheid is called apartheid in Southern Africa. It's called caste in India, where there's more black people there, than ever. These whatnot in Southern Africa, here in America, this is referred to with the black community, the urban environment, the ghetto, the hood, whatever you want to call it. Those of us who consider ourselves to be politically charged or politicized, we see it, little Vietnam. They had a international Vietnam, and there's a local Vietnam, and there's similarities there. The one common goal, one common thing that was violence, scientific violence as opposed to unscripted violence or unorganized violence, you know, but violence is as bitter as A-Trap, I believe, says, this is American as apple pie, you know, in blue skies. This is what it's predicated on. You know what I'm saying? That, you know, this so-called country, its foundation. You know, and so realizing one day that this violence of the law of nature, that this violence has somehow some kind of way to visit upon those who have been the inheritors of it. For those who want to come from a biblical perspective, you know, the sins of the father would have, you know, is to visit upon the children. And so in their subconscious, well, we have to prevent this. And this is another angle that you can take to understand the execution of Jaheim McMillan, you know, and his family, you know, demanding justice, you know, the arrest of the pig who legally executed this little brother, you know, in his subconscious. The only thing that outwardly or in his mind, you know, like, you know, when you realize you have to use the restroom or you have eaten all day, so you have to get something to eat. Well, in his mind, somehow, some kind of way, yeah, you know, his safety and whatnot. but other than that, in the subconscious, he has done his job. He has done his job. He has kept law and order, and so therefore he's confident in his sergeant and vice versa. You know, the sergeant, the police chief, whatever. You know, stand by their man. You know, then you know you take into account the mayor and the family when you know call for the. The police chief stepped down. They want the officer arrested, fired. And if that don't work and the man doing the job, then we call for a recall on the mayor, that the mayor should step down too. Now, if this has to be done to cool things down, you know, a token gesture. And we have to remember, a black man is dead. A black man is dead. You know? And This is why Huey P. Newton was talking about the elevating of the consciousness of black people, you know. And so a lot of people are, especially in this, you know, this liberalism, this, you know, this civil rights arena, and find themselves in another predicament. And so now what now? You know, what now? Can they go and tell the people? What now? Can they go to Gulfport, Mississippi, and tell the people? What can they, you know, the civil rights proponents go do and say to the mother and tell the people? You know, that, to my understanding, they've retained Benjamin Crump. You know, one can get really rich. One can become real wealthy off of black debt, providing you selectively choose which cases. High-profile cases, because there's been a number of cases that are necessarily high-profile, you know, a number of cases in New Orleans, Louisiana, you know, for instance. Cold-blooded murders of unarmed black men, you know, by Vice, even, you know. Modesto Reyes, you know, who was fleeing, had a backpack, you know, and of course the witness said, but never draw no gun. Come high profile cases, therefore didn't receive as much as the limelight as you know, George Floyd's. And people forget these things. We forget these things, and it's unfortunate that this takes place. And with the sum of these class differences, you know, it is what it is. We don't, you know, peace political part, we don't play that shit, you know. A black man's dead, period. You know, whether he, you know, lived in the slums or whether he lived in the nice neighborhood or if his brother played in the NBA or what have you. You know, we can go all the way back to Rosa Parks, you know, and that we include these things in the full rundown, you know, try to make some sense or these execution of young black men, which has to naturally drive people to an ultimate stage of confrontation. And this is where we're headed. I'm just saying it. You know, I'm just saying, I'm verbalizing on a radio show, but there's many quote unquote black people, you know, who share the same sentiments. A lot of it revolves around fear, heartbreak, you know, and you develop all types of conditions, you know, emotionally charged, and you develop a hatred for the state, you develop a hatred for police, you know. So they're being slow to release the camera footage, you know, with Laquan McDonald, who was murdered, executed in the overpass in Chicago, whether it's maybe 10 years ago, I believe, somewhere up in there, you know. The same thing, you know, the dash camera footage, what have you, you know, the story, the pig fabricated the story. A carefully contrived and orchestrated story, carefully worded story. You know, that Laquan McDonald turned with the knife toward the officer. You know, and this selective screening, so to speak, of word uses and terminology. You know, the classic legitimation to pull the trigger. Officer feared for his life. You know, this is classic. He's even betrayed, or he's got a gun. He's reaching for his gun out in the stirrup. You know, and so therefore the body cam footage is inconclusive. So the body cam footage can't bust anybody. It's your word against mine. You know, and so therefore we get nothing. Whereas the body cam footage of his brother's name, Philando Castile, in his car, you know, with his queen and his little daughter in the back seat, and clearly on record, you know, complied everything, and still was executed. Still was executed on part of the pig. Pig had his ever weapon. Said, yes, sir, legal. And he letting the officer know, letting his peers know, you know, asking for his identification, whatnot. He's telling, he's letting them know, you know, about the, you know, retrieve my. And he still, his reaction, it was in the subconscious. He didn't see a human being who would comply to his order, his command. He didn't see that. He saw enemy combat. He saw a threat. And it is what it is. How else would you explain that executing somebody in broad daylight in front of his queen and his own child? How would you explain that? You know, you know, it's a combination of things. And so they're being slow with the footage. Two things come to mind, and understand this here. They were very quick to show footage, at least some. And they can show you even more of the footage, but because it's so grim, they will only show you certain parts of the footage, but they wasted no time. You know, they wasted no time, you know, showing the footage. I believe it was, Connecticut or Massachusetts. Recently, you know, with the ambush of these, you know, these pigs, where they were called to a house, and you know, it was the brothers, and one of the brothers was waiting in ambush. I mean, he had the whole nine going, you know, camouflage, AR-15, and everything. He stashed off in the bushes, you know, and when he came to that address, to that door, he opened up on him. You know, he killed two of them. He cut two of them down, and the third officer was wounded up in the leg. And this is the officer that fired the you know, the fatal shot. Have yet regrouped himself behind you know, behind the vehicle and fire one shot, you know, but they would hesitate not at all, period. You know, to produce the body cam footage in a flash, you know, with no hesitation, you know. And what's the difference there? What's the difference? The difference is that this time, you know, the shoe was on the other foot. Now, these were some white boys. And these were some white boys who orchestrated, you know, this ambush. You know, the orchestrated ambush. You understand what I'm saying? In the Monday Night Football game just passed. You know, they did a whole, you know, a moment of silence, the whole thing. You know, with these two, you know, teams that were cut down. You know what I'm saying? Maybe it was the New England Patriots or Chicago Bears football game. You know, in Massachusetts. You know, they were wasting no time. You know, the only other time when they able to vouch for their actions is when they were clear, and the camera clearly showed that the young man had lunged at the pig with the knife. You know, this brother recently a call was put out with a young man with mental issues, and his brother was telling him, say, you know, my brother has he has these things, you know. And again, it's similar, like, you know, this thing that people have been in the military, you know, it's something that can trigger some type of response, you know. And so he had started from the house, and he left, you know, out of the house and with a knife. And, the police officer go there, you know, and they was real, you know, trying to, you know, go by his training and whatnot, you know. And of course, again, you can't really trust what's the media with the reporter saying, you know, reading it in the newspaper electronically. But anyway, you know, the brother becomes so distraught, you know, and he's in another world, you know, a world that they refuse to understand, you know, a world that they refuse to understand. And so the brother turned and ran toward with the knife. Left him no choice. And so he had the video footage. So there was no problem to show the video footage, you know, the camera, you know, the body cam. But here, with Millen and a lot of other cases, you know, it was hold up. And with the Laquan McDonald thing, it finally got the, or whatever you want to call it, you know, this, they finally released the body cam, but it showed a completely different story. You know, the little brother's on the overpass, and he's not even paying his pig no mind. You know, they all pulling up whatever stuff, you know, get out, you know, take this, you know, formation or whatever, you know. And Laquan McDonald clearly went around him, clearly went around him. You know, he gone by this business, he walked clean past, I mean, he went away from him, around him, and his pig opened up on a young brother. And this pig was so adamant about executing this little brother that you, in the footage, you can see the bullets after the little brother, this little brother, you know, he shot this little brother up. And he's so adamant, you could still see, he's still shooting, and the bullets is bouncing off the ground. You know, after the little brother had been hit, it's like overkill. You understand what I'm saying? And then one point somebody asked him, so at what point, we're going to play the footage, at what point show us this young brother lunged at you with the knife. You know what I'm saying? And, but it's clear. This is a type of relationship. And it's unfortunate that many of us don't understand it. Maybe some of us who don't want to understand it, you know, for certain reasons. There's two types of people when it comes to understanding in this world, in this part of the world. You know what I'm saying? That I've come to realize and understand and accept myself. As I just said, there's those who don't understand, and there are those who don't want to understand. You know, if you don't want to understand, then you bank on trying to fulfill some American dream. You know, you have made yourself become aloof from the rest of us collectively. You place yourself in an arena, trying to emulate, the white ruling class, the white middle class or rich upper middle. These terminologies that like to play with, for people, in other words, who have capital, people who have nice bank accounts, and so you become aloof from the rest of us until the shit hit the fan or something transpires and the pig goes out and he proves them wrong, or just when they're trying to create these programs to win black people's fake back in the police department, especially after, like I said, with the George Floyd thing, and just defund the police, these different groups, ideological formations, this thing referred to as anarcho-syndicalism, the anarchist state of mind. It's a number of them. Declaring these police free zones that you may have seen, in some of these states, when the city was on fire, as a result of the execution or the lynching, rather, or the lynching of George Floyd, orchestrated effort on the part of the pig to snuff the life out of this brother. And it's very clear. They had no intentions on taking his neck, his knee off this brother's neck, even at the several times his brother telling him that he can't, that he couldn't breathe. So he had been commandeered. The threat had been neutralized. So he was no longer a threat. And so the question is, why didn't this pig take his knee off a vital part of his brother's neck where it snuff out his circulation? So the question is why? There'll be those who would try to keep the police in a rational light, which has never been rational, but only in the minds of the dominant group. He was a rogue cop. so much so to convince black people he's a rogue pig and go back in his history and say, yes, he was a rogue pig. He had done this shit. It was an incident before. He called, he referred to this. One time he beat the little dude up. He called the dude a nigger. There was another time when he did this, this, and that. And, of course, some people said, the main thing is, the real reason why he murdered George Floyd, was a white girl. So that's a real reason why. That's a real reason why he murdered George Floyd, because he saw a threat in terms of the black male genitalia. It's a book Dr. Frances Cress Wells wrote called The ISIS Paper, and she dealt with psychiatry, psychological things, and she used her specific field of understanding, the study, and placed racism in its context psychologically. And this is one of the conclusions that she drew. Black male is a threat based on his genetic prowess. If he was to impregnate white women, and the male impotent powerless white man who is powerless up against him. And so therefore, this thing comes on in his subconscious, it says threat, beep, 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 threat, and in his subconscious, so therefore he must neutralize the threat, he must take the threat down. There are those who take in that position, and it would be extremely difficult to refute it. If you thinking that deep, if you going in a area, in a realm that you usually don't go into due to leadership, due to the leader, to those who have been propped up you know, given the media time after, you know, the lynching of George Floyd. You know, the usual suspects, the usual Negro talking heads, you know, the Negro bourgeoisie, even in some cases, you know, the black petty bourgeoisie, you know, who, you know, appear to be radical in some instances, you know, militant. You know, but there's a certain of us who, you know, we ain't bullshitting, we ain't playing around. You say, yeah, different factors, you know, why George Floyd was murdered. And, yeah, that was one of them. You know, you can clearly see even him looking into the, you know, show the video, he was looking into the camera himself. You know, like, you know, yeah, you know, he's got his hand in his pocket. You know, like he's applying even more force. So, you know, he's gone in his mind. You know, he don't see what you see. He don't see what you see. You see? So, and that's in general, you know, white male patriarchal rule. You know, the white male patriarchal, you know, this psychosocial, you know, sexual dysfunctional kind of thing that he possess. You know, but it is the structure of things. And this is why the police is very necessary. The police, and especially you have to look at the demographics of this you know, family dollar, you know, when it comes to the execution of, you know, Jaheim McMillan. What's the demographics, you know, of that part of Gulfport, Mississippi? You know, and we know Family Dollar stores, you know, can be placed near so-called, you know, poor communities. These terminology that they use, you know, underrepresented youth, at-risk youth, you know, these types of things, you know. And but, you know, this call that was made, this call that was put out, you know what I'm saying? And, of course, you know, it's a deadly mix. You know, there's no way in terms of the eyes. You know, I've seen video footage where the perpetrator was white, where we know for a fact that his whiteness gave him the privilege to not be executed. You know, white privilege. You know, the officer's white. The officer in himself, and he sees himself. So he doesn't see a threat. He sees somebody that he can reason with. He sees somebody that he can actually spend all day to try to put down a knife. And if he don't work, then they'll go get the one who's more trained than he is in this type of situation. He stands down until they call in, you know, so-and-so, so-and-so, you know, to come in. And he specializes, and he has this track record of 17 cases where he prevented, you know, the person from being, you know, killed by the police. You know, it is what it is. You know, how else are we able to explain these instances like that? But we're at a stage now where these types of confrontations are heading us into a bigger confrontation. You know, what a lot of us don't even realize, even within the so-called black community, even when a larger segment of so, you know, black people, what I mean, those of us who profess to be, you know, knowledgeable, you know, conscious, you know, academically trained and taught, and you know, in those type of environments and sets, some of us don't even fully realize what this execution of Jaheim McMillan has done. You know, the movie Frankenstein, you know, there couldn't have been no Frankenstein without Dr. Victor Frankenstein, you know, creating Frankenstein, you know. And what happened in the end? His alter ego turned on him in the end, you see. And this is the scary part for some people. You know, this is the part where some people say, well, you know, man, this brother should come back, you know, violence against the police. You know, what I'm telling you is that the violence, like Malcolm X spoke, you know, he said the case of the chickens coming home on the roots, and he was putting it in the, he was saying the same thing. And historically, isn't the person on the earth that could, you know, refute what he's saying, that could cut down or can dismantle what Malcolm X was saying at the time. You know, but the media, due to the effects of the media, you know, the now corporate controlled media, was able to spin it to a point where it got him in so-called trouble, got him in hot water with Lada Mahat, the leader of the Nation of Islam. You know, but the young brothers out on the streets have developed their own style of leadership, so to speak. And you know, us older brothers, you know, like for my generation, you know, a generation ahead of them has failed them, you know, but not all of us. And so there are those of us who understand the nature of it, and we realize where we're at and our options. You know, if black women ain't free, none of us ain't free. You know, as clear as night is from day. You know, and so the type of trauma, you know, and then of course, there's been instances where, you know, a week later, a month later, or days later, you know, some police officer has been killed, you know, and then the FBI in their memos of domestic terrorists are wanting to create this fictional person who they want the very gullible population to believe is a domestic terrorist on one end, and then have the nerve on the other end to tell you what motivates them. For instance, they use Alton Sterling as a classic example. They use Alton Sterling as a classic example of what happened and the possible potential response of a domestic terrorist due to the treatment the recent killings of black men, unarmed black men by police law enforcement. I mean, it's incredible. You almost have to laugh to yourself. You know, one, they literally tell you, they literally explain to you themselves. They literally tell you the response. They literally tell you what drove Michael Johnson, who declared that he's a lone wolf. I mean, he didn't claim no organization, no group. And the State the Pigs, you know, the government, FBI, was trying to connect him with, you know, Black Panther, New Black, even Professor Griffin at one point, you know, Public Enemy. And Professor Griffin had to get in the you know, the media, the social media, and you know, set the record straight. You know what I'm saying? But this is the like Malcolm said, this is the atmosphere that has been set. It has been brewing. You know, and America is on this deathbed. It is what it is. You wouldn't know it though if it were not for you know the NBA All-Star Weekend, you know, NBA Major League Baseball All-Star Weekend. You know, you wouldn't know it though if it wasn't for the Super Bowl. You know, you wouldn't know it if it wasn't for you know, Kanye West. You know, big concert. So you wouldn't know it, you wouldn't understand it. You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't realize that. You know, the new car, you know, the new phone. You wouldn't know it. You know, but these are the signs of times and where it's at. I horse and those that go out to the McMillan family. I am Jaheim McMillan, and Jaheim McMillan is just a younger version of me. You know, I consider myself to be a politicized revolutionary. And there are many more Jaheim McMillans out there. And it's my duty and our duty as revolutionaries to politicize them, to educate them properly, to get them to realize their place in the struggle, you know, for our liberation. Reform will only transform out of that into something else, as I spoke about this chameleon effect, you know, the chameleon ability, uncanny ability to keep transforming itself, to keep perpetuating its existence. And it's the nature of capitalism and the system of capitalism, and the manifestations of it is various facets, you know, and the police is part of it. It's an arm of the state, you know what I'm saying? And due to relationship, you know, we understand police to be the pig. It's women, is it all police? Well, you know, we know the law of nature that 10 of them in the room, chances is if you one good police, decent police officer in the room, so it's a good police officer. But the question still remains, where the other 90, why he didn't kidnap the other 9, slap the handcuffs on the other 9 and call for backup, put the handcuffs on the other 9 and haul their asses in. You know what I'm saying? So we don't know, we say, you know, stay tuned for, you know, next week, you know, next show, you know, brought to you by Political Party, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern time. You know what I'm saying? I'm your host, Chairman Nat Turner, People's Political Party, Coles, Brother Motherland, our Minister of Defense, and our sister on the ones and twos, who I refer to as our assault technician, Sister Amon O'Shun on the ones and twos, our National Minister of Communication. And man, those are my comrades, and I love y'all, and I love the people, you know what I'm saying, with all my heart. And we say black power, all power to the people, and you will rule, and the struggle must continue. We out of here.